This evening, for a few moments, I'd like to go back with you to the Old Testament and the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 8, and we'll read together this 8th chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, chapter 8. Who is like a wise man, and who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness of his face is changed. I say, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. Where the word of a king is, there is power. And who may say to him, what are you doing? He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful, and a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment, because for every matter there is a time and judgment, though the misery of man increases greatly, for he does not know what will happen. So who can tell him when it will occur? No one has power over the spirit to retain the spirit, and no one has power in the day of death. There is no release from that war, and wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. All this I have seen and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another to his own hurt. Then I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. This also is vanity. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him, but it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. There is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. So I commended enjoyment, because a man has nothing better than under the sun than to eat, to drink, and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life, which God has given him under the sun. When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out that work which is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. This is an interesting chapter in the midst of an interesting book. And the reason I focused on this particular chapter is because you have a microcosm in this one chapter of what we find in the entirety of the book of Ecclesiastes. A small example set within a larger picture of the same thing. As we have noticed before, as you realize in your past study of Ecclesiastes, the whole book is searching for the meaning of life. Why are we here? What is life all about? And the wise man Solomon, who is also the king, Solomon who of course replaced David upon the throne, a man to whom God had given tremendous wisdom, supernatural wisdom, it seems toward the end of his life, writes this interesting narrative in Ecclesiastes concerning what life is all about, and looking at various things that one might think would bring purpose to life, but every time he looks at something like that, it's a failure. He looks at life from the perspective of that which is done under the sun. And so much of the book is couched in language like that, under the sun. And every time he uses that expression in the book, you realize he's talking about things in the absence of the divine, in the absence of the spiritual. Life as seen just from a fleshly, physical perspective. Life as sensed to the five senses. Life under the sun. a life which concerns birth and life and death, and that's it. And with that as the only perspective, he thus looks for the reason why we're here and finds time and time again throughout the book things that just don't work, things that don't really matter in the larger sense of things, whether it's accumulation of money or power or wisdom or control or influence over others or even pleasure. All of these things really leave a man in lack or in wanting, because when all comes down to it, if there is nothing beyond this life and this is all there is, nothing really makes sense. The nihilistic approach to life is all that makes sense if there is nothing beyond here. And the nihilist says that nothing matters. Nothing matters. Existentialism says much the same thing with a slightly different perspective, but it ends up at that same place. Nothing really matters. Existence is meaningless. It is without purpose. And so remember, at the end of the book, after investigating so many false avenues of life's purpose, he finally comes to first a very sad and ugly picture, and then a very positive picture. The ugly picture is, if you put the first of the last chapter along with the book to this point, he said, nothing makes sense, and by the way, you get old, you get infirm, and then you die. He talks in the last chapter about the failing concerns of old age, whether it is teeth that fall out or hands that shake or a lack of power or strength in your body. And then finally, man goes to his long home. You're dead. Mourners go about the street. And so to this point, the book has been, what's life's purpose? Can't find it. Does anything make sense? No, it doesn't. What happens? Well, you get old, you get infirm, and you die. And that's the good news in terms of life under the sun. But then he comes to really the good news, not sarcastically, but true good news, when he says the whole conclusion that he's found is not what he said so far. The whole conclusion is, fear, reverence, respect God, and keep His commandments. This is the whole, as the King James says, the whole duty, the whole of man. And God will bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be evil or whether it be good. In other words, there's life past this one. When we die, we don't just die like the animals and go back to dust. The spirit turns to God who gave it, and there's judgment past this life. And God sees all, knows all, and especially as you dovetail this into New Testament understanding of what Christ has done for us upon the cross, there's tremendous good news for God's people. And in light of the judgment, in light of a life past this one then, these unanswerables of life, we may not have the answer to them, but they matter less. And the unfairness of life doesn't make nearly as much difficult in our minds, because we realize this isn't all there is. Again, you erase that last idea of life past this one, and you're left with this terrible unease of saying nothing makes sense and nothing is fair. Well, that's the book as a whole. But here in this one chapter you find, it starts with the idea of those things which are under the sun, things that are in this life and this life alone. And it concludes with the idea of things done under the sun in this life and in this life alone. But then in the midst of that, he says, and read beginning at verse 12, though a sinner does evil 100 times, and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before Him, but it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. This, in the midst of the chapter, is much like the conclusion at the end of the book. If you'll look back at the early part of this chapter, everything he's been saying, some of it's good fatherly type, at the very least, avuncular advice to the reader. And that which comes after this concerns things that just don't make any real sense, which leave us with a sense of unease and unfairness about life. In the midst of that, though, life seen under the sun that doesn't make sense, he gives this nugget that he spreads throughout, very scarcely throughout the book, and then pours on generously at the very end of the book, the idea that no, there is something beyond just what is under the sun. Everything is not vanity. Everything is not without meaning, because there is life beyond this one. There is a judgment past this life. There is a God in heaven, and we possess a spirit within us. And that changes everything. Now, before he mentions these couple of verses we just read, you notice he said before them that, well, look at verse number 10. Then I saw the wicked buried. But then this next is especially intriguing. The wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of holiness. And so this description of wicked people are wicked people who are pretending to be, appearing to be, looking to be holy people. They're coming and going from places of holiness. They're making themselves look as if they're something they're not, but they're wicked and they're buried. So what happens to them under the sun? The same thing that happens to everybody under the sun. They are forgotten. They are. In terms of this life and this life alone, if you expect to live a life where, if the Lord tarries his coming and the world still remains 1,000 years from now, don't expect to be remembered very long after you're gone. If that's your expectation, you have too high an expectation for how folks will remember you. To prove that to you, now I know there are some in the room that can do this, but I would venture to say most of us can't do this. Can you name all the presidents in order from first Washington till now, Biden? Can you name all the presidents? I think when I was in school I could for a test, but I forgot it as soon as I learned it. And I wished I knew it, but I don't. There are some presidents, in fact I know Abraham Lincoln is the 16th president. I can't tell you any other numbers. Well, I can tell you the Bushes, because I used to use their numbers to separate Bush Senior from Bush Junior. But no, I can't say all. Now, you mentioned one that I don't know, and I'll say that's one of them. These are presidents of the most powerful country in the world. And yet, less than 200 years later, in many cases, not much more or less than 100 years later, can't even really remember their names, much less anything about them. They're presidents. I'm not a president, and you're not a president. And so, if we can't remember them in such short order, who's going to remember us? But there's more here than just that. That's the fact, that physically speaking, from the life of the flesh under the sun, you're not going to leave much of a mark upon this world in terms of people remembering who you were after you're gone. But his point is here, you'd think, here's a man that's a wicked man, and he's pretended to be a holy man. He's come and gone from the place of holiness, and he's buried. And you'd think then, well, no, he's the same as anybody else. He's forgotten just like anybody else. Well, when did he get his comeuppance? He didn't. Whoever knew about all of his shenanigans? Perhaps nobody. When was he held accountable? It may be never. He was buried, and after a while, people forgot about him, just like they forget about everybody. Now, those kinds of statements precede this one we referenced a while ago about the fact that no, I'll remind you again, he says, though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know, down to verse 13, he's a shadow. He does not fear God, and it will not be well with him. In other words, it makes sense. Only if there's a life past this one. Only if. And those words before these about the wicked being buried, describing, we'll move past for just a moment, the king and our deference, a needful deference to him. He says, for every matter, verse 6, there is a time and judgment. Though the misery of man increases greatly, for he does not know what will happen. So who can tell him when it will happen? And no one has power over the spirit to retain the spirit. And no one has power in the day of death. There is no release from that war. Wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. Now he's saying, and this is reminiscent of his words in the 3rd chapter about there being a time to every season and a purpose under heaven. These things happen. Time and judgment. And yet the problem is we don't know. It's hard enough to prepare for something you know is coming. It's mighty hard to prepare for something you don't see coming. It just blindsides you. And his point is, most of the misery we have is because things blindside us. Time and judgment, they just happen to all of us, good and bad, right or wrong, for this reason or that reason. Life happens. And a lot of it brings misery upon us. And what real power do we have? What real control do we have? Well, when it comes to us and our own lives, not a whole lot. So much so, we really can't even retain the spirit. I remember those words of the Queen of England, the one before this one, who in her dying words on the deathbed said, "All my possessions for just one more moment of time." And yet for all that she had and all that she became, she couldn't buy herself a moment of extra time when this life was over. She couldn't retain her own spirit, even though she ruled an entire nation. Now again, remember, that precedes what we saw a while ago about the fact that evil people and things that don't make sense, the evil people in these unfair situations, they can prolong their days and they can continue and multiply their error 100 times over. But God sees, God will pay back, God will reward in kind. Things don't make sense without God, but with Him, senseless things begin to fall into place much more, because all debts aren't settled here. And the same is true after these 2 verses we saw a while ago. We referenced some things before them, but notice after them. He goes right back after mentioning the life beyond this one and the fact that the wicked will pay in 12 and 13. He goes back to this idea of on the earth and under the sun and the vanity, verse 14, which is there. There are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said this is also vanity. Vanity, emptiness. It makes no sense is what he's saying. What he means by that is the bad people get ahead and get away with it. And the good people are falsely accused and punished. And under the earth, under the sun on this earth, that just... it just makes our skin crawl and our blood boil. If there's one thing that just seems to be built into our DNA, it's this sense of fairness. We don't mind suffering if there's some fairness to it. We can deal with difficulty if there's equity and fairness. But when there's unfairness, when there's injustice, we just rise up because it's not right. And what Solomon is saying, it does happen. It happened back all these centuries back when Solomon lived. It still happens today. Then some things just are not fair. And if you eliminate the judgment in life past this one, all you're left with is that anger of the unfairness of things. And you spend your lifetime railing against how unfair and unjust the situation here on earth is. That's the way it is. And so what do? Well, again, he's under the sun in verse number 15. He commended enjoyment. In verse 16, he applied his heart to no wisdom. And yet, what did he get for it? Under the sun, on this earth, what did he get for his pleasure? What did he get for his wisdom? Well, he didn't get anything at all, because when all is said and done, you never do get any answers that way. And you can distract yourself by the pleasure, but you're still left with the nagging questions. You can distract your attention with things that might bring you happiness and pleasure for the moment, but you're still left, when the numbness wears off, to this unease with the unfairness of things. You try to figure it out with wisdom, and you're left with more questions than you had when you started with. And again, if you think that's negative, it is. It's meant to be. And just as the entire book looks at life that way and then says, but, and I'm paraphrasing here, but wait a second, there's more. There's life past this one that makes everything make sense. Just so this one chapter does the same thing. Before the 12th verse, nothing makes sense. After the 13th verse, nothing makes sense. In 12 and 13, no, God rewards his own and he punishes the evil. But that's not always here and in the here and now. I'll remind you one more time of how the book ends. The conclusion of the whole matter is fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. And God will bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be evil or whether it be good. That's why the senseless makes at least more sense. Why life has a purpose. And why we need not go through life angry about the injustices around us. There's more to life than meets the eye. And that's the way Christians live. I remember what Paul told the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, when he says, while we look not at things which are seen, but to things which are not seen. For things which are seen are temporal. These things under the sun, on the earth, they're temporal. But things which are not seen are eternal. And so that's food for thought. If you're here tonight and outside Christ, come to him. And if you've left him, come back to him. If you need to come, come now, as together we stand and sing.